I have the immense pleasure to welcome onto the temporary Radio Gorgeous sofa, Holly Black. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Holly.
Hello. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. We are here celebrating the sort of beginning of yet another one of your amazing series. And I will introduce you by saying that people probably know you best here for the Spiderwick Chronicles.
Yeah, absolutely.
But here is The Cruel Prince, which is the Folk of the Air series.
Folk of the Air, if you do know me from Spiderwick, this is a much older series. This is a teen book. And yeah, it is a return to fairy in long form for me. I've written a couple, you know, I've written a couple of standalones, and this is a series.
Yes. Okay. So we start out with The Cruel Prince. The Wicked King is coming, and I assume, like The Cruel Prince, that's not who I think it's going to be.
I mean, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and Queen of Nothing after that. That's going to be a trilogy, and I'm actually done with The Wicked King. I'm more ahead in the writing process than I think I've ever been, and I'm working on Queen of Nothing now.
Fantastic. Can we talk about... First, I want to talk about The Cruel Prince itself. Tell us about Jude. Tell us about the story a little bit.
So, The Cruel Prince is the story of a girl named Jude who, along with her two sisters, has been raised in Faerie by a general who's a red cap, who's a particularly violent kind of fairy, who is both acting as her parent and also the murderer of her parents. And so now Jude is old enough that she, having been raised here, wants to stay in Faerie, wants to find a place in the High Court, and is thwarted by the youngest and worst prince, Prince Cardin.
Mm-hmm. And the fairy world is magnificent, magical, and terrible.
Yeah. That's pretty... I mean, I think, you know, when I think about fairy, I think a lot about fairy fruit and the idea that here is something that is so delicious that when you eat it, everything else is dust and ashes in your mouth. And, you know, that sort of ruinous beauty of fairy. And I try and come back to that again and again in the way I imagine it.
And what is, because the very compelling thing about fantasy and fairy in particular is because it's very imaginable. Because she has feet in both worlds. She's the human in the fantasy world.
Yeah, it's in some ways a reverse changeling story, right? We often have the story of the changeling who grows up in the mortal world, and here we have a human in the fairy world. Although she understands fairy in many ways more than she understands the mortal world, she and her sisters have gone back a little bit to the human world, so they're not completely not acquainted with it. And yeah, hopefully that gives us a way to understand fairy.
Mm-hmm. And she is, as you say, desperate to stay. And to find a place. And to belong. Because she no longer belongs in the human world. But she's not of fairy either.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this is the worst idea. You know, she's an older sister, Vivi, who is actually a fairy. And she wants nothing more than to go back to the mortal world. She remembers... she's older, she remembers living there longer, and, you know, doesn't think that, despite having lived here now many years, that this is home, and thinks that Jude is making a terrible mistake wanting to stay. And, you know, whether or not that's true is at least part of the question of the book.
Yes, and that's what's interesting with it. You know, Vivi has just given to her on a plate a place where Jude literally has to fight for a place.
Right.
We also see, you know, another possible experience, her twin sister, who is finding a different way to stay.
Right,
along.
Who would like to be much more of a courtier. Mm-hmm. Jude hopes to be a knight. Mm. And, yeah, they're all sort of navigating this question of having, you know, spent all this time here. Now, as they move into being adults, what are they going to do when they're no longer under the protection of Matic?
Yeah, because changes are happening in Faerie, as we know.
And changes are happening in Faerie.
Yes, exactly. We don't want to give too much away. But I did find that idea interesting because you play a lot with that. There's characters who have similarities. She has a twin sister who's dealing with things very differently. And also, you know, the strengths of Faerie and her own strengths, she's frequently underestimated, which actually is one of her strengths.
She's frequently underestimated because she's mortal, and because this is a group of fairies who are living far from the human world, they also continuously forget that fairies, that humans can lie. And so she is able to lie, which is like a superpower in Faerie because none of them can. And she is, you know, she's been raised by this general to care about military strategy. And, you know, she has been a pretty devoted learner of both that and the sword. And so she has other capabilities that I think that... fairies deliberately underestimate because they don't want to think that a mortal could be as good as they are at
anything.
At anything.
Talk to me about the importance to us of fantasy.
Well, I think fantasy lets us look at things slant. And so, for instance, when we're talking about changelings, you know, we have all felt at certain times out of place in our families, right? We've all felt a certain kind of not fitting in. And when you're telling a story without fantasy, the question of why do you feel that way? Is it okay that you feel that way? Do you deserve to feel that way? Is it wrong to feel that way? Is a huge component of that kind of story. But if you say, this person is a fairy changeling, they are literally not human. It changes the way you tell that story, and it changes the questions you ask and the things you can explore. We all have felt angry at certain times, so angry that we might say or do something that will hurt the people we care about. When you literalize that and tell the story of a werewolf, you're telling that story slant. You're no longer, again, asking the question of, is there something wrong with you that you feel that way? I mean, sure, there's something wrong with you. You have lycanthropy, you know? But now we have to put that aside and we have to say, okay, now what do we do with that anger and what do we do with those feelings and how do we approach this differently? And I think it allows us both distance and it allows us to get closer to some of those stories at the same time.
And do you think that's also especially important in young adult fiction and in that time of our lives?
I think it is important throughout our lives, but I think that, you know, one of the things that is so important about being a teenager is here's a time in your life when, first of all, you're doing a lot of things for the first time. And also, secondly, you're making huge decisions about your future. You know, you're making, you know, the decision about who you really want to be in the world. And it's not like you can't revisit it, but you're really making big and important life-changing decisions. And so I think, you know, it's really important to, I think books are always important, right? Books build empathy. But they also let us try on the skin of other people, right? We get to try out being other people. And I think that's immensely important. When you're young and when you're trying to figure out, you know, a lot of things that may be outside of your lived experience.
And speaking of your lived experience, talk to me a little bit about your writing, how you came to write, and how you work, because you've worked both by yourself, but you have worked very successfully in different collaborations.
I always loved writing. I've written since I was a kid. I've written some... I always wanted to be a writer. I have these videos of me sort of talking about wanting to be a writer and family gatherings.
It was like that was the fantasy.
Yeah. It definitely is something that I didn't think would happen. I didn't know anybody who had, you know, successfully done the artistic thing that they wanted to do. My mom was a painter, but she didn't show in exhibitions. She, you know, I you know, knew people who were in bands or who played music who, you know, did it, you know, for themselves or locally. Or, and so I thought, well, why would I be different? Why would it be different for me? And I always, when I am talking about that, say, you know, when people would say, well, okay, if you believe in yourself, like, you can do it. And I thought, but I don't believe. Why would I believe in myself? And so I say to people, like, you don't have to believe. It's too much to ask yourself to do it and also believe in it. Just do it. You don't have to believe it'll work. You just have to do it. And, yeah, I just kept writing for a long time and trying to figure out how books worked. It took me 6 years to write, 5 years, 6 years to write my first book, which was Tie the Modern Fairy Tale. And a lot of it in the early stages, a bunch of elves sitting around drinking coffee, experiencing ennui. I had no idea how plot worked, how to get people up off the couch. You know, at some point I thought, how about the, like, a quest comes to them and then they don't do it? Like, wouldn't that be really different? I bet no one's ever done that before. Well,
friend. There's a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Plot matters.
And I had to work through all of that.
Yeah. Oh, do you think of those elves? Sometimes. Oh, the elves.
I don't, because I finally did. I wedged them up off the couch, and that was my first book. I figured it out. It's true that it bears absolutely no resemblance to the first draft. The names are even different. And honestly, probably I should have just stopped and written a different book and come back. But I did finally work it out in the end.
And tell me, does the process of you, you know, getting the elves off the sofa, but is that different in when you're collaborating with someone or when you're working by yourself?
Well, I'm faster now, obviously, than I was then, and I outline now, but I make a lot of changes and I double back and I do a lot of things that in collaborations I'm not allowed to do.
It'd be more organized.
For instance, when I was working on the Magisterium series with Cassandra Clare, when she makes an outline, she sticks to her outline. And so when we were writing together, we actually stuck to the outline, which was, I think, a really great experience for me because I was able to see how she outlined such that she could stick to her outline.
So that's how you do it.
Right. But also, I did still come up with some strange ideas, and I did veer us off a little bit.
Was that fun for her? Do you think she learned from you that, like, it's okay?
You'd have to ask her if it was fun for her. But she definitely, I think, got used to having texts from me that were like, what if something totally different happened?
We're going left. And we're getting off the outline.
But yeah, she was really good at keeping us to the outline.
Mm-hmm. And has that changed how you write solo?
I would love to say that it has. It has made me more committed to thinking about my process. I'm constantly trying to evolve my process. I would like to be a person who made an outline and that the outline was the story. I would love to be able to work out all of the stuff I wind up working out on the page in the outline, because it's not, you know,
why? Because that's, if that's part of your process,
it seems like a less panic-inducing method, right, than when you're working on something and you're like, oh, this is wrong. It's just wrong. Why is it wrong? I don't know. It's just wrong. Wrong. Which is
panic,
my current,
right?
Like, I've made a wrong turn and I need to go back and I need something totally different and I need to change it. That would be great to figure out before I began writing, right?
And committed to a deadline.
And so, you know, I think that experience has made me spend some time trying to do different things with my process. I've been doing a lot of fast drafting, where I've been using these, there's like an Alpha Smart where you can only see a few lines of text. And so if you write really fast, using that, you can't mess with the sentences.
Yeah.
And
Keep moving forward.
Right. I'm not sure that it's changed my process so much as at least I'm able to make the same mistakes faster, which seems valuable.
I'm getting through it. I'm mistake a minute.
Right.
Well, it's absolutely working. Holly Black, thank you so much. Fantastic. Loved The Cruel Prince.
Thank you.
Literally
thank
turning,
you so
turning,
much.
turning. Waiting.
Thank you.
Waiting for the Wicked King. The twists and the turns just are absolutely exciting. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks
Good
for
luck.
Having me.
Thank you. Keep making beautiful mistakes for us. Thank you.